My name is Stephanie. My nickname is Steep, like a steep hill, which I described why that's my nickname last week. And if you're here for the first time, you're going to have to wait a couple more weeks. You have to attend at least twice before I tell you why I got, how I got that nickname. That's the draw. You can't ask anybody else here either. So welcome. We will review a little bit of what we've been going over because we're not just meditating here. We're also learning about the different kinds of meditation, having some experiences here, talking about why to meditate. Before we know how to meditate, it's really important that we have a strong understanding of why we're going about this and learn the best ways to move forward with it so that we have some success. So we've talked, what we do in the beginning of the class is we really set our intention about why we're here. You know, intention is so important. I mean, even in the legal system, right? If you've committed a crime, they're going to be looking at your intent for the crime to determine the type of punishment and what kind of crime this was. So then in doing something virtuous, also our intention is very important. And each of you has a different reason for being here. So in the beginning, what we do to start the session is just for you personally to take a minute to think about why you're here. What goal is it that you're hoping to achieve? You know, just if it's to become a calmer person, a happier person, have less stress in your life, what goal is it for you? And that as you achieve that goal, just contemplate how many other people will be positively affected by your accomplishing this goal. All the people around you, people you know that you don't know, people that they come in contact with, kind of the ripple effect of your achieving your goal. And in that way, we're expanding our intention to include those around us. And if you're familiar with this, then try to increase it as much as you possibly can. And we're going to start with something we did last week, which was called the 9-round breathing meditation. It is just a nice way to kind of settle down. But before we do that, I'm going to review the posture. And for those of you who are new, and even if you've heard this a million times, when you hear it or when you tell it to somebody, then you are sharing exactly how the Buddha taught meditation, starting with the posture. So it's important. It's like you're walking in those footsteps to learn it, to say it, to describe it. And even if you're not sitting in that exact same position, to know it is important. So if you're sitting on the ground, then it's important. And even if you're in a chair later at home, it's important to have your rear a little bit higher than your knees. So that's why people put these cushions under them. You know, it'll keep your spine straighter. It'll keep you more alert and awake. There's different ways to have your legs, but everybody, you know, just get your legs as comfortable as you can on the floor. There's different positions called lotus and half lotus. Those are yoga postures. And you see them in all the tankas of the Buddha sitting in full lotus. But for a lot of folks here, it would cause an incredible amount of pain. So you get comfortable. And then your hand position is you're going to take your left hand and place it like a cup and put your right hand on top of it. And your two thumbs just gently touching so that you're making like this little circle. See? And you're going to place that just below your navel so that your thumbs are touching right around your navel area and just barely touching like they're holding a piece of paper. And you bring your elbows away from your body so that you're not crunched in and you want to have, you know, full open lungs so that you can be able to have nice deep breaths. The most important part is that your spine is lined up like coins so that it's as straight as possible and your head is actually the very top of your spine. So if you lift your chin up, you're breaking that line of your spine. So you want to make sure your chin is tucked just a little bit so that your neck is straight in line with your spine. And then so that make sure you're not clenching your jaw. And one way to do this is to have your tongue just gently placed at the back of your front teeth. This also helps prevent drooling, believe it or not, in case you get very relaxed. And then you can have your eyes closed if you'd like. If you're somebody who tends to fall asleep, it's better to have them a little bit open. And so this is the breathing posture. I mean, this is the meditation posture. Now, before we get into any meditation, we're going to do the 9-round breathing meditation we did last week, and I'm going to walk you through it a couple of times. But in general, first what you're doing is you're taking your right hand and you're closing your left nostril, and you're going to breathe in through your right nostril and then out through your left nostril. And you're going to do that 3 times. Let's try that 3 times. Breathing in and then out. And again, in. And then the opposite. You take your left hand and place it on your right nostril. Breathe in through your left and out through your right. In. And out. And then through both nostrils for 3. Now we're going to add something to this, like I said last week. We're going to add a visualization so that on the first inhale, when you're closing your left nostril with your right hand, on your first inhale, that first round, that first 3, you're inhaling all this pure, clean light from whatever holy beings are important to you. You're just inhaling that energy. And when you're exhaling, you're imagining all the attachment that gets in your way, all the attachment, the clinging to things, people, events. You're exhaling that in the form of thick black smoke, and it just leaves and dissipates throughout the far reaches of the universe. And then you're breathing in this clean, pure, enlightened energy, and you're exhaling, again, attachment. Then the second round, when you're moving over to breathing in through your left nostril, you're breathing in the pure energy again and exhaling anger, all the problems with anger that has arisen in your life, and exhaling that in the form of thick black smoke. And then the final round, when you have both nostrils you're inhaling through, you're exhaling ignorance. And ignorance in this way means just anything that's standing in the way of you and perfect wisdom. So all we don't even know our blind spots, right? But we know we have them. So all the things that are impeding us, all that ignorance we're exhaling in the form of thick smoke. Okay, so now on your own, at your own timing, your own breathing, remember we're starting with the right hand on the left nostril, and then just go through this 9 rounds at least once. And now we'll move into counting our breaths, that meditation, so check your posture. And now in your position, you'll put all of your attention on the sensation of breathing. This feeling of the air coming in and out of your nostrils, or the feeling of your abdomen rising and falling. And one inhale, one exhale equals one. You can put your mind on that count of your breathing up to 5, or if you prefer 10. And as you notice your thoughts wandering to something else other than your breathing, you gently bring your thoughts back as though they were a beloved child. Bring your mind back to the count. And congratulate yourself on noticing that your mind wandered. Every time you bring it back, you're strengthening your ability to focus your mind. You're noticing that the thoughts are rising up, and then you're letting it go. You're not following the thought, you're following the breath. So we're going to do that for about 5 minutes. I'll let you know when 5 minutes is up. If you need to move, that's fine. Just try to have all of your awareness on your breath. That was so hard because I had to cough for the last minute, and I thought, I can't cough because I have a microphone. How do I turn this thing off? So let's do a little quick review. This hopefully will help people who are here for the first time, and please feel free to stay and ask questions if what we're saying, what I'm saying, is confusing. And it's a good review for all of us anyway. The reason, the purpose of meditation is to cultivate positive mind states. And this could be anything from, you know, people like to want to meditate because they'll have more patience, they'll be less stressed out at work. So that's a positive mind state. All the way up to Buddhists who meditate because they want to achieve enlightenment. That's a positive mind state. So from any spectrum, that's why we're meditating. And that's why I asked you in the beginning to cultivate the goal that you came in with. But certainly, you know, enlightenment without meditation is not really possible. And meditation, again, just in Tibetan, the word means familiar. It's the same as familiarizing yourself with something. So we meditate all day long. We're constantly doing it. But this kind of meditation is taking advantage of a couple of other things. Last week we talked about how, remember I drew that house and I talked about that TED talk, and like at the top of the house, this guy gave this description about how performance is like the roof of a house, how you go out and perform in the day, your day, and he was working with a golf, golfer, yeah, and he had had a bad game, right, he's some famous guy. So he was saying, you know, that's his performance, is on top, that's what you see. Same thing for us when we're meditating or talking or going through our day. That's what's on top. Underneath that are our thoughts and our feelings. And so maybe the golfer thinks, oh, I have to remember this thing about my swing, and I know I'm a good golfer, and I have to go back to that feeling I had when I won that. And that will help. But underneath that, below that level, there's also our what did I call it last time? Physiology. And that there's data coming from this all the time that's affecting our feelings and our thoughts and ultimately our performance. And one of those streams of data that's coming from our physiology is our heart rate. And that's something we can certainly control. We can work with. We can work with our breathing, change our heart rate, which affects our thoughts and our feelings and our performance. And when I listened to that whole talk, I thought, so that's exactly, you know, these old meditators were pure scientists and geniuses at all of this, because the very first thing to do is to settle down and be centered and meditate before you start working with the topics that in Buddhism are so important. So last week when we meditated on impermanence, there's a real difference, I think we all agreed, in what we understood about impermanence when we were in that meditative state rather than just reading something. The material would have been, it would have just been up here. And we would have gone, yeah, of course, impermanence, yeah, I got it. But when we meditated on the subject and combined that changing our physiology, there was a completely different experience. So that's one of the reasons why meditation is so important, because the rest of the Discovering Buddhism course is going to go through these various topics. But it starts with what is the mind, and the very second one is how to meditate. Because unless you get that groundwork really settled down and understand the importance of it, the topics aren't going to be conjoined with that and be as powerful. So there's two types of meditation that we've talked about and we've been practicing now. Basically, you can put any meditation you learn into two camps. Focus or stabilization, which is what we were just doing, counting our breaths and trying to bring our mind back over and over again, strengthening that muscle to focus. That's one type. And then analytical meditation. And this school of Buddhism, you know, one without the other would not be complete. That you can study all the topics, but the kind of development and understanding that you're going to have without that focus is very different. You can do all the focus meditation in the world, but as Geshe always says, you go in with nothing, you'll come out with nothing. Maybe you'll come out a little bit more relaxed. But it's not just about being chilled out. It's about completely changing the way that we see and think. So then under focus falls calm abiding. And that's a very special kind of meditation. And if you're new, there's and even if you're not new, there's an article in the readings that are online, the very last article on calm abiding that I really encourage you to read. It's a very short article, and it will kind of go over the steps and stages that we talked about last week and talk a little bit more about it. There's also, last week I was talking about this How to Meditate book. It's not in the bookstore right now because we've run out, but 6 more copies are coming in. And if you think that you want to get it, come up and let me know, because I'll let, he thinks he can get some more from the publisher if there's more than 6 of you who want it. There's also this book called How to Practice by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. It's got a really dense little book that has a lot of good information in there. And he also goes over all the stages of calm abiding. So last week we talked about each and every step and stage of it. Now, even before you reach the final stage, there are levels of pure peace and calmness. And what happens when your mind is that calm is this incredible joy, incredible bliss that comes with that. In fact, one of the pitfalls in the middle of, before you reach that final stage of the 9 stages of calm abiding, is that you might think you've already reached it because you're so blissed out. And in fact, there's still some more stages to go. So even before you get there, even when you're very in the early stages, you'll feel something. You'll feel this kind of joy. And I've heard one teacher talk about that's why it's so important to combine that kind of meditation with the topics, because then you're studying impermanence or whatever topic you're studying, and you're having, and combined with this joyful, peaceful state, this calm state. So yes, you could just study the topics, but how powerful it would be if you're combining it in that way. So they work in tandem. We practice them in tandem. You don't have to master one before you master the other. You'll see that as you're going back and forth, they will feed off of each other and encourage both of those sets of skill. I'm sure you all have had a similar experience to this that I've had. So I like to write. I do a lot of creative writing. And there's something in me that gets in my way before I decide to sit down and write. It's like, oh, wait a minute, I got to make that phone call. Oh, wait, I got to clean the house. I need to go for a walk. A million different things come to mind. And I read about it in this book called Writing on the Right Side of the Brain. And it talked about how literally you're shifting gears. You're physically shifting gears up here, and part of your brain is going to fight against it. And I thought, that's a perfect, it was so helpful for me to understand that it wasn't just me procrastinating. So I had to go through certain rituals. I've heard about writers who have to clean the whole house first and light a candle, and then they can write, right? I have to go for a walk first, and then I can sit down and write. It's the same thing with meditating. We have to shift gears completely to this other side of our brain, which is why that 9-round breathing meditation sometimes helps us. So other rituals help us, you know, and invoking certain energy, and we're going over our reasons for doing this. All of these things help us as we prepare to meditate. But I actually almost feel it in my body, this physical discomfort. And then once I'm there, I'm like, why was this so difficult? This isn't that hard. I like to write, or I like to play the ukulele or meditate or whatever it is. So even before we, what I'm trying to do in this course is introduce you to all kinds of things so that you can decide which road you want to go down. And I really encourage all of you to experiment with calm abiding by finding an object that you want to use as a focus. We talked, you can use your breath. Breath certainly can be something. But that if you have a physical object that you're looking at and using as your focus for calm abiding, it will become like instant biofeedback for how your mind is moving or not moving off of that object. And the benefit of having an object that you consider holy is that it's kind of imprinting something more powerful on your mind stream than if you were just going to meditate on this mug. So as we've said, it's important to take one object and not switch around, because that'll completely mess up your meditation. And I asked Geshe-la, because somebody asked me the question last week, should I see it in front of me or should I see it all around, all three-dimensionally? If it's a three-dimensional object, you should see it as though it's in front of you. So if you have a statue or a photograph or whatever, then you have that sitting in front of you about eye level, 3 or 4 feet out, and that's how you should memorize that image. And then you get ready into your meditative posture, and you try to then call it to mind. And so if you're able to even see it once and bring it to mind when you have your eyes closed, then you're already on that path of the 9 stages. And then we talked last week about how do you know when you're in your first, second, third stage. The wonderful thing and amazing thing about calm abiding meditation, it's a very clear path. And you'll know exactly where you are on that path. And you'll know there's obstacles to each stage and there's antidotes to each stage. And like we've talked about last week, having an image there provides this instant biofeedback for you about how much your mind is shifting off of it. It's like watching a candle flame. That image will be flickering and moving and you can't find it and I can only see the ear and now I don't see any of it and what happened to it. I have this one image of the Dalai Lama I always meditate on. I can't tell you how clearly I can suddenly see other images of him. I'm like, wait a minute. The photograph I saw in the center, now that's the only one I'm seeing. How come I can't see the one that I have on my altar? Because your mind is playing tricks on you. It's doing everything except what you're trying to get it to do. And then you will develop certain tricks to how to get your mind to just go back and back and back. And that's what we'll talk a little bit today about how to, some of the antidotes to the obstacles that are in your way. We are going to have a practice day here January 24th. And so if you have an object that you've been using, then please bring that in because you'll get to practice together and that kind of collective energy will help you. That's one of the meditations that we'll do. Two more kinds of meditations I want to talk about. Under analytical, you can further divide that into subjective and objective meditation. So subjectively, you're trying to cultivate an attitude. Say we're going to meditate on compassion. We are, like last week actually, when we were meditating on impermanence, we weren't meditating on the topic of impermanence. I was putting you through an exercise of meditating on something specifically so that you would cultivate an understanding of meditation. That's more the subjective way. Objectively, if you were looking at compassion, impermanence, you would be going through certain points and trying to familiarize yourself with what is impermanence. This is impermanence. This is why I should understand it. Same thing with compassion. You're going to meditate on certain topics to develop a compassionate attitude. That's different than meditating on compassion and what are its benefits, what are the obstacles to developing it. So just some more information for you to know. And then there's also one of the articles I know that you all have been reading is about meditating on the mind itself. And that's tricky. We're going to try a little bit of it later today. It's certainly one of the ways that you can develop calm abiding, but it's generally Geshe-la suggests that you take an object because meditating on the mind itself as an object is tricky. It's very tricky. So I just wanted to say that in case you're reading that article. I think the article says that you should only meditate on the mind and not use it, right? Yeah. And I've talked with Geshe-la about it. And he said, you know, it's such a hard thing to do to just meditate on the mind as an object for focus. To actually have something physical is much easier at this point. But it's still important to meditate on the mind, and we'll do that a little bit today. So let's talk about obstacles. So how many people here really struggle with what we call monkey mind? Your mind is just racing all over the place. That's your biggest one. Okay. What about lethargy and sleepiness? And which is that? That's mine. Okay, that's like elephant mind. Okay. And the rest of you are good. Okay. So, and then there's other obstacles. And if I haven't named one, let me know. But lethargy, let's just go over some things that sometimes help. Because that, to me, that's, I'd much rather have monkey mind than lethargy. Because lethargy, you just become unconscious. So the very first thing to check always is your posture. And a lot of times you might have your head too low, so make sure your head is straight. Practice keeping your eyes like halfway open and gazing down at the ground. That's something I did for a long time. Just kind of a blurry focus, not looking at something specific on the carpet, but just have your eyes open. Increase the light in your room. I used to meditate first thing in the morning with the sun right on my face, and that really helped. It's probably also helped that I was just woken up, but which is another thing. Look at the time of day you're meditating. Try to move it around a little bit, especially if you're tired. What's your most energetic time of the day? Try to pick that and see if you have any different experience. If you're meditating on an object, like a photograph or a statue, then when you are bringing it to mind, surround it with bright, bright light. You know, bright light. See if that changes. I exercise before I meditate. It helps me, gets my endorphins going, and I just feel better. I've heard of other, this one teacher said that she would imagine she had a hood on her head and that she was taking the hood off. So there's different ways to trick your mind. When I have monkey mind, on the other hand, and it's, I just imagine that that's a TV. And I'm looking over the TV at something else. And so I don't try to get that to shut up. I just try to stop paying as much attention to it. And eventually I don't hear it anymore. There's ways of tricking your mind. But, So especially for excited monkey mind, our mind is used to having free rein. We hardly are ever reining it in all day long. We're just kind of like, yeah, go wherever you want to go. Fine with me. We're just letting it run wild. So sometimes during the day, we can try to practice this of like, I'm not going to think about that till after lunch and see if you can do that. You know, some topic that's trying to call your attention. So try practicing reining in your mind at different times. I'm going to drive all the way to work and not care, you know, about the lights and the other people and whatever. And you'll try to build, you'll be building up that ability to rein in your mind throughout your day, and then see if you can apply it during your time of meditation. The other thing with excitement is to try to bring your awareness down below your navel. And sometimes almost it's kind of risen too high, so to try to bring your focus down into the center of your body more. Also make sure your head is not tilted up. Sometimes that's also said to raise your excited level. Always check your posture, and they say for both of these an important thing is to go back over your goals. So if you're starting to get frustrated in meditation, kind of review, like, why am I doing this again? What are the benefits of this? Who's able to do this? Call them to mind, and to have a lot of patience with yourself. And the more that you notice that your mind has moved away, every time you do that, you can think of it as though you just lifted a weight at the gym. So it's not, oh man, my mind wandered again. It's like, oh wow, I caught it again. Just switching the way you see that. And then another obstacle is our expectations. So I know sometimes I've had really great meditations and think, great, now I'm kind of going in that direction. And then the next time it's like, you know, really awful. And so our expectations of what we want to have happen in meditation and letting go of them is a practice in itself. You know, just, and so to have faith that whatever we practice will improve with practice. So if we have faith that practicing equals some kind of improvement, then we don't have to be so harsh on ourselves if yesterday is not as good as yesterday, not as good as the day before. And then another obstacle is sometimes we have these very strange sensations, and we sometimes get carried away with those. I remember... In the beginning, I used to think, just put all my focus on things I'm hearing. That's what I decided to do, right? I'd read that somewhere. And all of a sudden, I had this feeling that I was like one giant ear. And I was like, wow, this is, I was just tripping on that feeling. And later, I told Geshe-la, and he just teased me forever about that. I thought this was like some great accomplishment. He was like, oh, this is just ridiculous. Just know that you're just going to have these kind of sensations and not to get too caught up in them. But just try to look at them in a more detached way. You know, that this is what happens with the mind sometimes. And it's something else that you don't want to follow. Just like one of your thoughts. You're trying to give it room. You're not following it. You're not squashing it. You're just trying to give it room. Same thing, I don't know if what you've noticed with your thoughts when they rise up. If you give them more room, they'll just quietly die down. If you follow them, then they get all excited and they take you all the way over there, right? If you try to stop them, for me, it just makes it worse. But if I just give it all a little bit more room, then everything settles down. So same thing with our strange experiences that we might be having. And then the biggest one is discouragement. People think, I can't do this. I just can't do it. But you are doing it. And we can talk a little bit more about that if you feel like you're getting really discouraged. But the biggest... thing to have really is patience with yourself. Are there any other obstacles that people are having that we want to get some help with?
Getting started.
Getting started. All right, you needed the cushion. Did you get that cushion? Okay. Well, you see, then you'll be started. Get cushion. So for those of you who are at home watching, his biggest obstacle was getting started. So what would help get started? Yeah, there is a camera back there. People actually watch from home. And I sometimes get email questions about things. So it's freaky. And sometimes if people can't make it, they'll watch it online. If you're one of those people, then ask Joanna. She can tell you all about that. So getting started, what would help somebody to just get started? Get started. Maybe pick a day that you know that you can actually get started, right? Is it like picking a day or having the time?
It's just variability in variability in my schedule. Because of my kids, it changes.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's like, I was going to do it first thing, and then...
They woke up. Yeah. There's the meditation on the kids.
Especially this time of year.
Yeah.
So many things. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Anybody have similar obstacle that they can share? Yeah.
I had one friend. This wasn't my experience, but when she first started meditating, she knew if her kids heard her up in the morning, they'd be in there immediately.
Uh-huh.
So what she would do, she had a big closet. So she would actually just creep into her closet and close the door. And she meditated in there, and that's how she got started.
Hmm. And even if it's 5 minutes, it's like, okay, I'm going to try to find 5 minutes a day, even if it's in my car, before I go in the house, or in my car. I do that in my parking lot at work sometimes, just 5 minutes. Then at least, you know, if that's one of the biggest hurdles of getting started, then, okay, I've started now. You know, I've really started. But, yeah, there's a lot of challenges in terms of finding time. Yeah.
That I've been doing is to meditate in my to-do list.
Oh. Okay.
So, and I review my to-do list several times a day.
Uh-huh.
So when I don't do it, for instance, at the beginning of the day for whatever reason, you know, when I go and read my to-do list, I meditate. Oh,
yeah.
Man, I have to do this. And if I see it three times, finally,
I
do it.
Yeah.
Just a little trick.
Okay. I think it's helpful for people, for all of us to hear what helps. So like just the way that I decided to treat my thoughts like a television in the room, you know, or a radio over there that I could just think, I'm really good at ignoring radios and TVs. Why can't I ignore this chatter in my mind? I think these things will really help and will, you know, in your groups you've been coaching each other, I think. All right, let's do a meditation. We're going to do it on, this one's going to be on the nature of the mind. Yeah. Say this again.
What do you mean by giving your sensations more room?
Oh, more room. Okay, the question was, what do I mean by giving your sensations more room? So, like, some people will have some very kind of unusual experiences, like they're seeing colors, or they feel like they're floating, or like I felt like I was a giant ear. The advice is not to get carried away with that, not to even focus on it, but to just, like, when I say give it more room, like not follow it, but not try to squash it. Just let it sit there, and it'll start to dissipate. Same thing that happens for me when I'm watching my mind. So this is a very good question because it's a lead into the next exercise. We've talked before about how the mind is like kind of like the ocean, right? And it's all the thoughts are like these waves on the ocean. If I see I can now sometimes see a thought rising up. It almost feels physical, like, oh, here comes a thought. And as soon as I see that then, and I don't follow it, I just kind of move away from it a little bit, it'll die back down into that ocean. And then the point is to try to make those spaces between those thoughts larger. Just like there's a natural pause when you breathe at the very end of your breath, there's like this little pause before you start to inhale again, right? Same thing with our thoughts. If we are slowing down and just sitting and watching them, we'll see that there's this natural dip between our thoughts. But usually they're so fast, it's just, you know, like they're always just one stirred up ocean. But if we can really slow it down, we'll see these waves. And then we try to spread that time between these thoughts. So there's two ways of kind of meditating on the mind. Did that help? Okay. There's two kind of ways of meditating on the mind. When we were counting, you were probably observing your thoughts. So that's one way. You're kind of observing your thoughts. You're trying to get a little more distance from the thoughts so you're not following them. Like, oh, yeah, I got to do that, and then this person did this, and last year at this time I was doing that. You're not following them. You're seeing them kind of come up for your attention, and then, oh, there's a thought. You're labeling it a thought, and it kind of moves away. And then comes up another thought. So that's observing your thoughts, which is certainly a very helpful meditation. And you'll be doing parts of that in this next meditation. But also try and see if you can just observe the ocean itself, the nature of the mind. You know, we're living it all the time, so it's sort of hard to like, it's not like meditating on my hand. I can look at my hand and go, that's my hand. We're going to try to do that same thing with our mind. We're going to take some time to just see if we can feel our mind and what comes to mind as we do that. So that's a meditation on the nature of mind. We'll take, like 5 to 10 minutes to try to do this, okay? And any questions before we start? If it's hard, you know, you can go back to doing the breath. That's real strict focus meditation. You're trying now to bring all that focus that you're using on your breath. As your mind wanders, go, wait a minute, I want to just focus on the sensation of my mind, the nature of my mind, and see what happens. So this is just an experiment, yeah. Okay, so she's asking, do I mean focus on the clear light? No, because that it's so hard for us to really know the clear light nature of our mind. But this kind of meditation actually helps in what Buddhists say arises at the time of our death, which is the clear light nature of our mind. That this meditation will help us be able, if you've been reading at all about that, and if you take this course, you'll be studying what happens at the moment of our death, right? So this clear light nature of our mind arises, and we'll be more able to conjoin with that if we practice this kind of a meditation. So just see what happens. You know, just what you're going to be trying to do, instead of putting all that attention on your breathing, you're going to see if you can just feel the nature of your mind. Okay? And in the nature of the mind is clear and knowing. And just see what happens. It's, some people say it's kind of like looking at the night sky. It's like looking at something bigger than our little thoughts, right? So, you know, you're your own laboratory, so everybody will have a little different experience. So and if you need to stretch right now or get up and shake out your legs, that's fine. If you need to move to a chair, that's fine. If when we're meditating you need to get up, that's fine. If your neighbor's coughing or if I cough, it's just one more thing in the meditation, right? People, don't worry about getting up, moving, and disturbing people. We have to all work with our own minds. Okay, and I'll ring the bell at the end. We'll take about 5 to 10 minutes to try this. Okay, so get back into your posture, get comfortable, make sure your back is straight, all those different things that we checked before. And then, you know, make sure you take a few deep breaths. So as you're entering into this, you might want to put all your attention on your breath for at least 3 and kind of center yourself and then move all of your awareness to your mind itself. Okay, so take 3 nice breaths and count them, and then place all your attention on your mind. So can you feel how the focus meditation helps this kind of meditation, helps that kind of meditation? If you're doing meditation on an object, which is one of the reasons why I think that article, why he's talking about this is such an important meditation, is because you're going to be using all of that, the ability that you're gaining from focus meditation and putting it on the nature of the mind itself. Any questions or thoughts about that? Yeah.
I just really have a difficult time with that.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm looking for. I know what's in there, but I don't know exactly, is it this little space that I'm looking for, or...
Mm-hmm.
And my thing is this colors are always in my vision. So I'm like, it's very polluted, I guess. I don't know.
All of our minds are pretty busy, pretty racing around. Yeah. Yeah, it's tricky. Yeah.
Yeah, I have a couple of things. One is
there's a mic coming.
I had a difficult time not having visual images come up. Didn't have as many thoughts intruding as in other meditations, but visual images came up because it's really difficult for me to I'm visual, so it's very difficult not to have any visual ground at all.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like when you close your eyes at night and you get kind of like that, those little pinpricks of light in the black. That's kind of like what I was focusing on, because it wasn't anything else that I thought that I should be focusing on. So that was one big deal. And I don't know what I'm what I'm supposed to be focusing on. I can analyze it. I can say, okay, the mind is hearing and smelling and all these things that are happening. I'm recognizing that it's doing that. I'm not sure what exactly I'm supposed to be, if I'm supposed to be analyzing it or just experiencing.
Just saying, if you can find it and experiencing it. It's more of an experiential thing. Let me see how he describes it. What I sometimes will feel is that I am an ocean, that there's just this vastness, like the sky or an ocean or something, and I can just feel it. It's not a visual thing. So he's saying here that calm abiding can be achieved through meditating on the mind itself, which is, I think, the hardest way to get to calm abiding. So that's why a visual is much more important, especially if you're a visual person. One of the advantages of observing the mind now is that it will strengthen your ability to manifest the mind of clear light as you are dying. Okay, so that's again in this book written by the Dalai Lama. To prepare for concentrating on the mind itself, you need to overcome emotional obstacles, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, he's saying it's very difficult. After you recognize the nature of the mind as luminosity and knowing, stay with it. Use your power of mindfulness and introspection to remain in that state. So it's more of a state that you're feeling. So check out the articles that are in the reading. And I'm just introducing you to little things, and you're going to have very different experiences with this as you go on. But I want everybody here to have like this smorgasbord appetizer of all these different kinds of meditations. And if you continue to practice focus meditation and then go back to this one, you'll have a very different experience than you did just this minute. Just like in the beginning when you close your eyes and counted, in the beginning it's just like madness, and then when you do it after a while, you're like, oh, okay, I can do that. Yeah.
So they ever suggest you just give up and it's not going to work right now,
yes,
try it another time?
Absolutely.
I went through all that. The first 3 or 4 minutes were great, and then you ever get a song in your head?
Yeah.
Hopeless.
Right.
Yeah, okay, and then I got back on track, and then I nodded off.
Yeah.
So there are times when you just say, it's not working.
Yeah, definitely, because you don't want to... you don't want to discourage yourself. So there are times, especially if you're sluggish, say, I'm just going to stop and do this another time. There's something I was going to say about that. Oh, and if you're having we've talked about this before too, especially if you're doing this, every day you want to end on when you're doing it, when it's good, so that when you come back to it, you're thinking positively about it. So sometimes you have to trick your mind. So sometimes I'll trick my mind and say, you know what? I'm having a really hard time calling that image to mind, right? As soon as you call it to mind, you're done. You can get up. Then all of a sudden, boom, there it is. Okay, got it, you know? Or as soon as I give up, I can see it pretty clearly. So, you know, and then if I tell myself, look, as soon as you call this to mind, you can stop. Then I can see it, and then I can hold it a little bit longer. And then then it starts to fade, and I go, okay, just one more time. Just do that one more time. And then all of a sudden, I've done that for 5 minutes, you know, and then I feel like, okay, now I can end. So keep track of what tricks like that work for you. I think this one is tricky because before we've been using counting, and some of you have been using visual objects, or then I'm talking you through something. This one is just about your mind, and you'll see how slippery your mind is and how it's trying to trick you. So when I had a dog years ago, and I was at this class where I was supposed to train her, the trainer told me, okay, when you get her home, just try to make her lay down for like 10 minutes. Okay, so that you have to assert that you're the leader of the pack, right? Just make her lay there, and she's going to get up, and you got to make her lay down. She tried every trick in the book, you know, just like our minds. First, she was just like, she'd try to get up, and I'd, no, I'd make her lay down. Then she'd like kind of crawl over to this side, you know, and I have to go, no, you're going to be here. And, you know, she'd try to like back up, all kinds of things, and finally she fell asleep. And I thought, that's just like our minds. You know, it's not just going to sit there until it really realizes there's some benefit to that. So that's why in the beginning we have to go over now, what's the benefit of doing this again? You know, what I do is I think of people who can really do this and the way that I'll feel if I could really do that. And then I'll say, okay, I'm going to try to do that. And then I know and I make a tiny little bit of change and progress. So I wanted to introduce you to it. He says right here, this practice of meditation itself sharpens your mind and improves your memory qualities that are certainly useful beyond spiritual practice. I'm trying to find like a really good quote on I will do that and bring it in next time, but about meditating on the mind itself. This is How to Practice the Way to a Meaningful Life by His Holiness the Dalai Lama. It's more than just on meditating, but he's got chapters on all different kinds of practices. And I was just looking at on calm abiding in this book this week to introduce you to some other things. All right, so we'll play with that one some more. But again, I guess the main takeaway is that it's not a visual. You will see things. You know, you're going to have to learn to ignore them just like you're ignoring your thoughts. But it's funny, like when you're counting your breaths, were you seeing things then? Were you seeing colors when you're counting your breaths? So that's just going to be part of the background for you that you'll have to learn how to like not follow that color, just like you wouldn't follow that song, like you wouldn't follow that thought, you know. And you know, we're going to have to know how to get that dog back to just stay right there, and it just takes time. All right, so let's do a fun one now. This one you can let your mind have all kinds of colors. You'll see things because I'll be asking you to see things, and I'm going to guide you through this meditation. And so stretch if you need to stretch, or move, get to a chair, whatever you want to do. This won't be as difficult. We're at the meditation gym. Getting sweaty. We're sweating. Feel the pain, right? Feel the burn? Okay. All right, so get in a comfortable position. Put all your awareness on your breath for a moment and make sure you're breathing deeply and evenly. And I'm sure if you're like me, you had something to drink this morning, tea or coffee or juice, but I'm going to follow tea. So just substitute whatever it was that you drank. If it was orange juice, then you think of that orange. If it was coffee, then you think of the coffee beans. If it was tea, then you think of the tea leaves. If it wasn't today, think of the time that you did drink something. So you have that cup in front of you. And now think about the fact that there was a specific person on this planet who picked those tea leaves. And just let yourself imagine that person, probably on the other side of the world, who picked those tea leaves, who handled those tea leaves. And what kind of day was it for her or him? And how far they had to travel to get to that field? And the roads that had to be built to get them to that field, even if it was a dirt road, when they picked those leaves, the nose leaves traveled by road to some factory to get processed. And think of the people driving that particular truck who brought the tea leaves to that factory. And then the people in that factory who managed the whole process of getting the tea leaves into a tea bag, into a box, into a cart, onto a truck. To all the different people who handled this tea bag that went in your cup of tea. And think about the clothes that person wore. And who made those clothes? And the person who picked that cotton for those clothes and got it delivered to a factory where it was spun into cotton and dyed, created into cloth, and the people who sewed that cloth into clothing for the person who picked your tea leaves. And think about the person, all the people this person cares for, the person who picked your tea leaf, all the family people in her life, people she cares for, the people who care for her, and what they ate that morning. And how they got their food. And the person who raised that person, her mother, who took care of her, taught her, clothed her, and fed her, and all the energy that went into that. All the people she comes in contact with now as an adult. And then think of all the roads that this tea bag traveled on to the factory, from the factory to an airport, to a post office, to a truck or a train, to a store to a shelf to your house. And all the people who built all of those roads. And all of those facilities, post offices, airports, grocery stores. How many people went into this cup of tea you had this morning? And then take a minute to expand that in any way you want, this interdependent world that we live in, any direction you want to move with that, to continue that meditation on the connections and interconnections from one simple thing, like a cup of tea. Okay, now we have about 15 minutes left, and what I'd like to do is, last week we were in little groups, and if those people are still around that you were in your group with, for those of you who are new, just turn to the, we don't want groups that are too big, because then people won't get enough time to talk, but you're going to get back in groups, you're going to find somebody in a group close to you, and what I'd like you to do is introduce yourselves, and then talk a little bit about this exercise, and then your meditation experience in general, because we learn a lot from listening to each other explain and describe what's going on in your own practice, how you've progressed or not progressed, or whatever's going on for you all. So just take about 10 to 15 minutes to do that. You can talk about the experience you just had in these meditations and meditation in general in your own practice. Is that clear? Okay. So if you're here for the first time, just get into a group, introduce yourself. In this group? You can get into a different group if you'd like. If you see a teeny tiny group, you might want to go join them. You want to make sure there's not like too many in your group. You'll never get a chance to really talk.
Really? I'm going to go to the back of the land about
It could take about a minute to finish up. Okay, let's come back to the group now. Thank you. I was kind of eavesdropping here and there, and sound like some good conversations. I forgot to mention that one of the, I think I mentioned this in an earlier class, one of the ways to help you get started and to have some confidence in your ability is to, especially if you have, like, say, an hour on a Saturday, to try to do 5-minute sessions, very short 5-minute sessions, and just, you know, unless you're spontaneously doing more than that. But it helps you know that, okay, I'm just going to do this for 5 minutes and then get up for 5 minutes and then I come back and just see how that goes, you know, so it's not too long sitting in one time and you could get a little break in between then, you go get some tea, check, do something, not something that's going to be too distracting, like check your email. But, you know, just get up, move around, do some yoga or whatever. It's to have a snack, then sit down and do another one. I would take a walk around the block, come back and do another 5 minutes. So try that as well. And that's what we'll actually be doing on the practice day, is kind of short sessions, ending on something positive. Any questions or thoughts? Yeah, there's a mic somewhere.
And I have tried to meditate at the gym.
Oh, okay.
Rowing, which is hard, a hard exercise. But my question is, and I've been able to do it.
Yeah.
So if I concentrate on my breathing, even though I am, you know, exercising, you know, hard, is that considered meditating? If I'm able to concentrate on my breathing?
Well, you know, it's definitely practicing. You know, I would say it's, you know, like we've talked about, meditation is familiarizing yourself with something, right? And we've also talked about how, like, how do the mountain climbers, they talk about reaching this state of bliss because all they're focusing on is getting that pin and moving a leg and moving an arm and not falling off to their death, right? So you're doing something similar to that. You're doing all this physical work and your mind can't stray. So similar to like prostrations, people do full-length prostrations because it's very physical and they're putting all their mind on one thing. If you do it long enough, you'll notice your mind start to, you know, play some tricks. But it's a good practice. It's just like what I was saying about practice throughout the day, reining your mind in. Because then you'll be able to use that when you're sitting on the cushion.
Yeah, and when I'm doing it, I'm not thinking about the exercise.
Right.
And I am able to get my thoughts out of the way. So it's working.
I don't think it would... I think it's certainly not going to hurt, and it's going to strengthen that ability to focus so that when you are sitting on the cushion, that ability to keep your mind on something, hopefully, then you can do even when you're just sitting still and not exercising. So I think there's countless ways to practice throughout the day something like that, focus, and also something more of the analytical meditation. So we talked about ways of using your mind, and you went to the party and you practiced preparing your mind before you went to the party, and I talked about the experience in the airport. So I hope, are you all doing those exercises? Yeah? Anybody else? Because that's going to be our Christmas present if you come next time, is we're going to talk more about those. So think of a place that you can do some kind of meditation like that. So for the new people, what I'm talking about is going into a place that's normally challenging and changing your thoughts about it. So if you're on a long line and people are bumping into you, you know, what can you do to completely change your mind so that that's not bothering you? And what I described was an experience of seeing everybody coming out of this tunnel from the airport as though they were really related to me. And if I really thought they were related to me, they looked so cute. And they were no longer kind of, oh, that's not the person I'm waiting for. And then it was a completely life-changing experience. So try something like that. So when Geshe-la first moved to this country, he lived with me. I think I told you all that. And at one point, there were four of his monks who were traveling the country living in my house also. So we had like all these monks and my mom. And anyway, it was really interesting. And they taught me this one really cool thing. Like they love to have their photograph taken like at Harris Teeter or at the mall. And I was like, you want your photograph taken here? Well, and what they would do is this one monk in particular told me that he loved to go because that was where he got to practice generosity the most. And I said, what do you mean? He said, I just walk through the aisles, and this is actually a practice that they do. Because you can, in India, there's not so many places that you can see all these beautiful things piled up, right? Even like I'd take them to the K&W cafeteria, they'd never seen so much food all in these piles. And then they mentally offer it. And what it does is that even though nobody's ever going to get that food, right, they're just imagining that they're being able to give it. It changes their mind. It changes how they're feeling. So now is the perfect time when you're driving around and you see all these Christmas lights. Light is considered an offering. Why is it an offering? Well, just imagine when we weren't able to flick on a switch. To be able to have light meant you could see something at night. You know, you could see where you were walking. You could see other people. You could read. And on this symbolic level, then it dispels ignorance. So when people light a candle, they're saying, may I be able to dispel ignorance in 1,000,000,000,000,000 worlds, right? So then lights, anytime you see lights, you can say, you know, may ignorance be able to be dispelled. May I be able to dispel ignorance. So when you're seeing Christmas lights, this is also what I learned from them, it's just a way to offer something else, something beautiful. So if you're trying to give something beautiful to somebody, what would it be? You know, why are we putting out Christmas lights? We kind of forget all these things. We just do it all. Oh, my mom did it, and I did it, and now this doing it. But think of it as a gift. And then think if, so this is a mental offering. And so I remember in the beginning, I used to think, I don't really get that, you know, this mental offering list. And then it hit me because I was questioning these things. And I was, the reason I'm passing these on is because I was so stubborn. And I was so, like, I would ask Geshe-la 3 million questions, and I wouldn't accept any of them. And then something would hit me, and it would change my thinking, and then it had really taken hold. So I was really questioning all this kind of mental offering and all that. And one time I was in the car where half of my realizations happened, and nobody was letting me in. I was trying to get out of this difficult parking lot into traffic, and finally somebody let me in. So I got in front of them, and I went, thank you. Now, they could never hear that, right? But I still felt it was so important to say thank you. And it changed the way I was feeling. If I said something else, you know, if I just cursed all the traffic that hadn't let me in, that's what I would be left with. That's the odor in the car now. But I was like, thank you, thank you. And I knew immediately that I wanted to be able to let somebody else in the next time they were in that situation. So that's the same thing with mental offerings. So practice it this week and then bring in your stories next Monday. You know, mental offering or a difficult situation, what you do with your mind to change that. So we heard last week about a party that somebody had to go to, didn't want to go. She changed her mind before she went there and had a fantastic time. So these are the kinds of little mini miracles. I think as Thich Nhat Hanh said, people come to him, they want to learn to meditate, and they want to have all these amazing experiences. They want to change the world, they want to stop the world, they want to be able to, you know, transport themselves. And he said, if you can just change your mood, that is a huge miracle. Start with that. So then the trick of that is catching it before it's full-blown. And then we almost look forward to the chance, like, oh, I can't wait till I'm right on that cusp. Because then if you're on that cusp of losing your patience and you don't, you're able to apply something, that's just like when we're able to bring our mind back to the count. You've just strengthened that ability. You've expanded your, you know, like you expand your stomach when you're sick and now you start eating again. It's the same thing. We're expanding our abilities to be patient, to be kind, to be whatever, when we have that chance and we don't fall over into anger. Okay, so now we're ending, and this is the way we end. We think about our goal when we came here. We think about all the effort it took for us to come here on a Monday night, to get in the car and drive here, and all of that effort that we put, we just planted seeds. You know, in Buddhism we're saying we're planting seeds of merit, of virtue. It was a virtuous act to come here with the intention that you came here. And so now it's about where do we dedicate that those seeds to ripen? And so then you think for you, how would you like those seeds? If this is like gold in your hand, where do you want to deposit this gold? You can deposit it so that the obstacles between you and your meditation practice will diminish and disappear, so that you can achieve the goals that you want, to have a calmer mind, a clearer mind, a wiser mind, a kinder mind. As high, as far as up that line that you want that to go. And then thinking of all the people around you who will benefit from that. People you know, the people you don't know. All the ways that you're connected to all these people around the world. And you dedicate the merit so that you and all of them will be able to achieve all these positive goals. And good night. Thank you.